don't want to see you coming back in here with fucking junkies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained junkies.
Look at anybody going sitting up a pint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
How's tricks and welcome to the Boz at the EGA show, the three man weave. Mick and Mark with me as usual, lads. How's it going?
Hi, Maris.
Quickly.
Hello, Mick. How's it going?
Before we get started, I just want to run through some recent lists and see if you can spot the trend, right?
Yes.
Down one, top of their division, Donal Hare scored not six. Kerry won 3-15 to not eight, which is an unbelievable result. Set up a final against Westmeath. Top scorer was Shane Conway with 8 points.
This is in the hurling.
Yeah. Keep going down. Leitrim promoted up out of Division 4. Terry Hyland manages Leitrim. Finally, I know Clare drew, but the top scorer in the day was Peter Duggan with 1-6. Clare sitting pretty in Division 1. What is the trend?
Sitting pretty. They could easily not get into the quarterfinals. We'll see what happens.
What is the trend? Don't ruin this.
We are rocket strapping, people. When you come on the show, you're guaranteed success.
So what I'm saying is, Lee Keegan, give us a call. You don't have to worry about anything else. Don't worry about conditions in Castlebar or countering Galway. Just give us a shout and you'll be fine. You could get a few
Castlebar from Cavan.
We might need to do a double episode on that.
we could do a live event.
Good news for Meath this week.
Brilliant news for Meath, yeah. We're going to speak to Shane McEntee later on in the show about Meath football, which not only is looking good in the league, but as a whole is looking a lot more rosy. I was actually down there for the Armagh game and the really small point, but something nice to see was the amount of kids on the pitch at halftime with the Bring the Ball campaign where they go out and get to play. I know Jamie Queenie and Seamus Kenny are both been recruited to take on the kind of underage development. So yeah. I suppose it's painting a picture of, we're going to hear later the commentary from the absolute roar when that final score went over. But there seems to be a very positive vibe around there from what you can read into the league, I guess.
Mark, myself and yourself were only talking earlier on. It was just like I came up in a... just an old article I seen that I'd forgotten that like Meath had lost to Longford in the championship last year. And we actually kind of counted down to it. It wasn't a surprise. We said on the pod all year that that was a game that Longford could and might even win. And then they did. And it just seems like a different storybook in Meath completely at the moment in 2019.
Yeah. When you think about that, I remember both Meath and Cork could have been relegated to Division 3 going into the last weekend last year. Meath narrowly avoided it and have gone in a different direction to Cork, who narrowly avoided it. You know, there were two ways you could either go, and it's gone the opposite.
Before, a good win for Cork at the weekend.
Yeah, about time too, definitely so-called weaker county at this stage. Speaking of so-called weaker counties, Mr. Mark Farley.
Yes, I am bringing back the one true love of this podcast, the Around the So-Called Weaker County segment, where we delve into the lower reaches of the GAA divisions and pull out some of the telltale stories in there. Last week, we had our hurling show, obviously. We were talking about the last round of the league for a lot of these hurling teams down in the divisions. They took place, so we have now our finalists in both the promotion and relegation finals. A couple of interesting things, I suppose, in Division 1B. Carlow lost to Offaly, which now sets up a relegation final between Carlow and Offaly.
Classic.
And it's hard to know who's going to win that one, because I think this time last week, we were said that Carlow were in a better place than Offaly, but I don't know now.
Yeah, Offaly scoring 4 goals, I think, was telling in that game. It was only 4-8, but I think the weather nullifies any kind of, like, obviously all hurling was going to be low scoring last weekend, but the fact that they got through and got the goals that they needed, it just seemed to me it was one of those, like, this means business kind of affairs, and I'm sure they'll have the same attitude this week, and you just wonder, do they ultimately have better hurlers than Carlow? We'll find out. Like, this is a championship match. Like,
I'd wonder how seriously Carlow took that game. That's a very good point. Richard Cody was on the bench. I know he was came on early because of an injury. Chris Nolan, who we spoke about tearing up, was also on the bench. Like, I just wonder about the seriousness to which they approached that game.
Yeah.
Which is weird because of what it actually means.
Yeah. But Carlow have a bit of history in that they lost to Westmeath in both the league and the Joe McDonagh Cup last year before playing them again
in the final
and beating them both times and beating them handy both times. Like,
yeah.
Speaking of Westmeath, if they don't go up now in Division 2A, they may throw their hat at it because they've won every game now. They're playing Kerry in the final.
They'd want to give us a call.
Yeah.
But Kerry are putting up huge scores at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah. hammered, was it me that hammered at the weekend, I think?
Yeah, 3:15 to Notts, oh yeah, pre-mentioned, yeah.
And then,
where's this Notts thing coming from?
It's Morris. Morris and Sailors. Division 2B is interesting because Wicklow are playing Derry in the promotion final and Donegal are playing Warwickshire in the relegation final. And at the weekend, Wicklow played Derry and Donegal played Warwickshire. So they're all playing each other one after
the other. My eyes nearly popped out of my head when I seen the score in Wicklow and Derry. We were talking about how Derry were sauntering away with that league, yeah, and Wicklow bet the shit of them.
Yep.
Well,
two by two goals.
And considering it is around, like, you know, around the so-called weaker counties, it was one of the Wicklow players was on Twitter.
Warren Kavanagh, who was in our so-called weaker team of the league last year and also was in it at one stage in the championship. He's like a Tigerish. I remember I compared him to Tommy Doyle last year in terms of a really Tigerish kind of defender who would easily force his way into a Shire County. But he made a great point that not only for their sake, but for their supporters' sake, they should be entitled to a bigger day for a Division 3 final than going up to Clonus to play Monaghan.
They're saying it should be in Croke Park because all of the football finals are in Croke Park, and he did use weaker counties. He didn't say so-called weaker counties. He put weaker counties in inverted commas, which is in itself being calling so-called weaker counties.
So-called inverted comma.
Yeah, exactly. And in a lot of the replies, it was the same thing. But it got a lot of traction, actually, and a lot of people were talking about it on Twitter. I will point out one thing, though, that, just to be fair, and I'll give out about the GAA till the cows come home and their lack of promotion for hurling and everything like that, but it is fair to say that the Christy Ring, the Nicky Rackard, the Laurie Marr, all them, they have a finals day in Croke Park as it is,
yeah,
where the league is the only chance where Division 3 and Division 4 football teams are going to play in Croke Park in a year. And it kind of does give the opportunity for a team at every level to get to a certain point and getting to play in Croke Park in the year. So it isn't great. Why not just put it on in Croke Park? But at the same time, it's not as if Wicklow can never play there.
Yeah, I guess, like, the counter argument to that is the idea that, like, when football gets this second tier, which looks like it's coming, they'll also get their day in Croke Park as well. I don't see the harm in why they couldn't play, like, the Division 3, Division 4, Division 2 finals on one day in Croke Park. And because it's, again, going back to this team, like, I often wonder, does the GAA kind of realise what it's supposed to be about? Like, ultimately, we can talk about revenue and talk about what it does for supporters who are going to miss out or vice versa, but it's supposed to be about the players. And if you don't give them kind of the platform to play in the best stadium in the country, which it is for what they've done in the league, then I understand what you're saying. They will have a chance later on in the year, but I don't see a huge...
I'm not criticising the point. I'm just saying that maybe that there is a consideration in that. That's all. Like, sure. I still think it's worthy making. And it's good to see a team like Wicklow going out and, like, beating Derry. You would never have said that a few years ago, that was possible. And now they're in a final and they want it to be a bigger occasion. And that's brilliant. And they should get as much credit and attention and experience as they should, as they can.
It's also good for Derry, who that was the first loss of the league, so they bounced back, having lost. They were in a final last year, but it was the relegation final for Division 2B, so they've definitely come back strong. And another one, Donegal hammered Warwickshire 5-18-17. In the Division 3A, Lancashire, who we talked about last week, having come up from Division 3B, actually beat Roscommon, and Roscommon finished top of Division 3A. So they're playing Louth in the relegation final. Who's to know who's going to win that? And
well, I'll tell you, I don't. And it won't be in Guest's Freds later on either.
And Roscommon are playing Armagh in the final. And then you got Sligo and Longford in the Division 3 final, 3B final, sorry. But one interesting thing as well is, we had an interview with Declan Bogue about Antrim and the possible green shoots in Antrim for the footballers and the hurlers. But whatever
since then,
green shoots were there, I'm afraid the frost has gotten to them, because they're struggling in both. They lost to, or sorry, London only lost by 2 points to them there at the weekend in Division 2A, the hurlers. And the footballers, I think, are now joint bottom or second from bottom in Division 4.
Yeah, just above London, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I don't know what's going on there with Antrim. It should be something we maybe look in the coming weeks into.
Definitely.
But how can, it's the second biggest city in Ireland, really. I know there's the different sectarian divides or whatever in it, but those are things that are meant to, we were even talking about last year, where that's sort of becoming a thing of the past.
Yeah.
And how are they not?
Their numbers are still big enough to be at least relevant in the GAA across one of the two sports, and they're neither at the moment, and it's really sad to see. Like,
I think there's, you can't stress enough, the, we've an interview up on site from a couple of weeks ago with PJ Brown with Neil McManus, and yeah, the one thing Neil McManus said on this team was you can't stress enough how much the loss of their home is to hurling, not only because of, like, it's whatever about a stadium, games you're playing, but because of that there's like really petty internal rivalries about who's going to play, what club is going to host games, which clubs are they going to go to. The they're moving the games around the clubs, they don't really have a home. So like, we if there's one thing that's been established over the last couple of weeks, it's the importance of a home advantage in a wider sense, and the fact that they don't really have one, and it looks like there'll be no resolution to that for quite some time now, is pretty sad to see.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, that's it.
We're on weaker counties. I don't know if they even count anymore, but Leitrim got promoted from Division 4 this week, yeah, which is a pretty good story in itself, from at least the former so-called weaker county, but flying now.
Exactly. I wasn't even going to put them in this segment because I thought, well, it's the so-called powerhouse Leitrim at this point.
so-called powerhouse.
It was interesting though. I was reading Seamus O'Rourke, speaking of former guests on the show, proud Leitrim man, former Leitrim footballer in his own right, has a brilliant video obviously up about the time Leitrim played in Croke Park, which was in the final of the Nestor Cup in the 90s. But I was also reading, there's an interview with him, there's a book came out just before Christmas called On the Seventh Day, which is some of the best 30 years of great sports writing from the Sunday Independent. Mm-hmm. And one of them is Dennis Walsh's interview with him. David Walsh, I should say. I always get the Walshes mixed up. David Walsh's interview with him.
Or the Welshes.
1994 O'Connor final when Leitrim won it. And it's just kind of, it's telling the story of Seamus O'Rourke's day, the day of the final. And they were back in, actually, the Breffni Arms in Arva, which is just across the border. It's in Cavan, but just beside Carrigallen. And there's one line I love from it, from Walsh. He says about O'Rourke, "And Seamus O'Rourke was savouring every moment of it. He liked especially when someone sang and there was quietness. It gave a man a chance to think about the day, the achievement. He tried to figure out why it was so damn important. And he put it down to this. Leitrim's win allowed the county to take its place with all the others, to be considered no different. That was all it ever wanted." Which is a great line. And it's one of the few times now they have had that success since.
We've lost our inferiority, like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's lovely. And yeah, it just shows what today means. And we've an interview that just went up on balls.ie last night there with Damien Moore, and Angus O'Machin wrote it for us. And he kind of says much the same. Like, you know, there's talk of, like, you know, this is as big as Leitrim winning in All-Ireland, like, you know what I mean? You've seen that in the celebrations at the weekend, and you've seen that, like, you know, they've been down for long enough now, like, you know, and our conversations about Leitrim in the last 2-3 years have been negative, and they've been, how do you keep players, and so, and now we're back to the old one, which is the whole population of the county will be in Croke Park,
yeah,
for the final, and that playing in Croke Park, which they haven't been in since 2006, I think, yeah, which is the longest run of any county without having played there, is as big to them as getting promoted, like, you know.
And it wouldn't be great if the Wicklow Herders had the same.
you can't go 2 minutes without a bit of negativity on this podcast. Me, the most positive man in Ireland. That's hard to listen to for me now, I have to say.
Speaking
Morris never stops giving out.
Of positivity, Meath are absolutely flying, and we're going to speak to Shane McEntee about that. Before we do, I think this audio, we got this audio sent in to us by LMFM, which I think perfectly summed up what it meant to Meath. So this is the final 8 seconds for their commentary.
For the long range score, it's dropping down on the edge of the square. Meath have it, now they've won it. Meath have won.
I think it's a prerequisite for local commentators to be hoarse by the end of a game. And if they're not, I think they probably failed at their job.
100%. And there's also just that, like, nearly all you can take out from that is them shouting Meath. It's like the Leeds United manager, Marcelo Bielsa, when he won the league with Newell's Old Boys in Argentina. They started, you know, they got him and they started heisting him up, you know, that kind of celebration.
Did you call them Old's New Boys?
It was a slip of the tongue. I called them Newell's Old Boys when I corrected myself automatically. But anyway, they started tossing him up in the air, and all Bielsa was able to shout out was Newell's Carajo, which translated in English to Newell's Fuck, which they couldn't obviously swear at LMFM, but it just sounded like that. It was like, Meath have won it.
Yeah.
That is, it's a key feature of local commentary. And to move on to our next example, this is when David Clifford scored the winner against Monaghan. I think this is my favourite local commentary ever.
James had put a high in, mighty ball in, looking for Kieran Donnelly. Kieran being held inside. Kerry still have it. It's a goal!
It's a goal!
A goal by Kerry.
David Clifford, the saviour.
And who does it? David Clifford has salvaged something. It's 117 to 117, Ambrose.
No, we'll go for the jugular, Tim. That's a fantastic goal. High ball in from James O'Donnell.
No more than Kerry deserves.
And a great finish by David Clifford. Bottom left-hand corner, bullet. 117 to 117.
That is magic.
Absolutely. Yeah. Ambrose O'Donovan. The COCOM has a huge part in them. And it's like, it is the commentator has lost the run of himself in the kind of shouting and screaming, but still trying to get the information across. But what the COCOM does is just start cheerleading. And just start like shouting like you just happen to be mic'd up, but you're a fan in the crowd. Yeah. You know, so he's while the main commentator has completely lost the run of himself and is unbelievably excited, he's still trying to tell the audience something. Whereas the co-com is just kind of going, "Oh, Kerry, get up the fucking field."
The famous Martin Carney, get back,
shouting at Dean Rock for taking yards, wasn't it, in the All Ireland final?
See, that's a funny example you made there, because I often kind of, one of the joys of local commentary is that they quite obviously are biased towards their own fans, and then you listen to somebody like Willie Haggerty, who manages to, across a multitude of counties, can be totally their full supporter and totally anti whoever they're playing. So this example, for example, is when he was commenting on Leitrim, which makes it you fully convinced that he's a Leitrim fan.
The government had it back outside. Leitrim look to bring it back to a 1-5 ball game. A 1-5 ball game. What a score! Dan Rooney has kicked over an incredible score. And every time Leitrim are on the floor, every time they look beaten, they've got another score, and we have 3 minutes to play.
That's poetic. I mean, what he symbolised there. And then he does exactly.
I listened to that match live, by the way. That was one of the best commentary performances of all time. And I've only ever heard him do the Roscommon games before that. You're dead right. But that's being a professional. Like, he's doing it for the audience. He's not doing it for himself, you know?
And simultaneously, he does the exact same thing with Roscommon.
Roscommon 2-15, Galway 12 points. Roscommon didn't read the script. Galway read the script. Roscommon are Conor Jeppies. Look at the scenes of delight. Galway are absolutely dejected. They didn't see the train coming. Roscommon have trampled Galway into the ground.
Oh, you got so many metaphor or similes.
That's so good that I remember playing that for my father in Galway. And even he, sporting Galway in the day, turned around and said, "Geez, that's powerful."
But what would you be without it? Like, I mean, excitement of that is... it can't be matched by being at a game, to be honest, by watching it on telly, for sure. In fairness, and this is no real criticism of it, but you can't do it. It's on national radio. You can't be as one-sided. But if you're just watching that and living and dying by everything they said. Like, I was stuck, unable to listen to or see the Clare Limerick game, which I was meant to be going to at the weekend. And I couldn't get Clare FM, and I listened to the last 20 minutes on Limerick radio. And sure, Jesus, I was nearly cheering on Limerick by the end of it to get the equaliser. Because you just get caught up in the passion of the whole thing, like, you know, and it is very parochial, you know, there's nothing like it.
There's also the thing that I always find it's funny when you're listening to a game and then somebody you know was at the game, because you listen to the game and it sounds like it's the greatest game of all time. And then you later come home and go, "Jesus, that was desperate stuff, wasn't it?" And you're like, "What?" It sounded brilliant.
And I guess that's before I speak to Shane here, I think that's the thing that you can really pick up on at this time of the year. Like, I'm very hesitant to read too much into league games as a whole right now, or especially when the weather is as bad as it is. Like, I think a lot of games, actually, it's like club football. A lot of games are determined by who's fitter, so who'll just last longer. So you saw that, for example, in a lot of games this year. Like, just to go back to that Meath Armagh game for a minute, Armagh were dead in their feet with 10 minutes left. They only made 3 changes and Meath just ran them out. So I don't necessarily know how much you can read into tactics or how teams are going to set up right now, as opposed to just when they're just fitter. You know, it's the same thing as club football. Teams that can break quicker, that can last longer, they're just going to be there. But simultaneously, one thing you can read into is that kind of the mood, the atmosphere. And we heard Mead was hopping at the weekend. That's kind of something that will carry over into the championship, surely, regardless of how the end of the league goes now. That's kind of, you've built up a buzz around it.
It's definitely interesting to chat to Shane as well, in terms of that, having won the Mead championship with Dunboyne. He's just been on this tidal wave, and he's just riding it. So it'd be interesting to see if that has had an effect on the way they're playing.
Good stuff. We'll hear from Shane now.
The impression of the game will get all with what you put into is like a walk of life. If you're good enough, go out and get it, no more about it. Your mother sends you down to the shop for a pound's worth of goods and she gives you 50 pence. You can't get the pound's worth of goods, can you?
All right, I'm delighted to say we're joined now by Shane McEntee, Meath footballer. Shane, how's the form?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Thanks for the call.
You're flying high in Division 2. I was kind of wondering, to what extent did you prioritise the league at the start of the year?
We're going all right at the moment. I think we probably made no secret that the league was a big target of ours. We've been out of Division 1 for far too long, maybe 12 or 13 years. So we've probably targeted it more than maybe some teams. And so far it's gone relatively well, thankfully. So definitely was a big aim of ours this year to try and get that promotion.
So I remember I was out at the first O'Byrne Cup game in O'More Park, and the horrible day when you played Laois, and you were well ahead of them in terms of fitness at the time. And I'm wondering, was that done with the view of peaking for the league itself, or are you looking further down the line and that it's just kind of a byproduct of the work you'd done before Christmas?
I'd say more so the latter there, yeah. Like,
okay.
It's a tough one. I know what you mean. When you're trying to prioritise the league, you're kind of thinking, are you putting all your eggs in one basket here and you're going to be burnt out by the championship? But I don't think that's the case. I think it's maybe there was some hard work done at that stage. But I think lads are, every year, now over the last number of years, lads are coming back in good shape and minding themselves well when they're away from me and when they're with their clubs and in the off season. So we're probably bearing the fruits of that a little bit now, where lads are hitting the ground a little bit further down the line fitness wise when we start, as opposed to maybe a few years gone by. So that might have been the reason for that day, and obviously we've put in a lot of work since then, which has carried on into where we find ourselves now.
I'm wondering, there seems to be a real buzz around Meath football at the minute. Like, I know I was down at the Armagh game and the Bring Your Ball to the Games campaign, so there's a load of kids on at half time. I know Seamus Kenny is doing a lot of work behind the scenes as well, and obviously Park Talon was absolutely hopping last weekend. I'm wondering, is that perceivable to you as a player, this kind of good vibe at the minute?
Yeah, definitely. We've spoken a bit about that amongst ourselves. You know, it's probably the biggest buzz around in the last number of years, certainly for a lot of us that we've experienced. And it just goes to show, within Meath, there's so much just diehard, genuine supporters. And you know, there was anyone who was there at the weekend or who was even listening, there's a few good clips going around from the radio commentary.
Oh, we've heard them.
You'd swear that was a final of some sort, and it wasn't. I mean, there's people in Navan there who were brought up on watching Meath teams competing at a far higher level than what that game was the weekend. But it just shows how much football does mean to people when we're back being a little bit more competitive. So once you start doing that, there's so much genuine goodwill and massive support. Like, it is very much still the number one within Meath, and thankfully we're giving people maybe a little bit more the last few weeks to buy into, and we can see the buzz and the hype that goes with that. So it's great.
Is that something that you can feed off, or is it a thing that maybe you try to drown out that kind of stuff? Because it's very easy to get distracted and carried away with yourself on the crest of a wave, but at the same time, it can be I imagine, a massive positive effect on the team when they see that buzz around the county.
Yeah, like, I mean, you have to be mature enough about it, and kind of the saying, you're never as bad as they say you are, and you're never as good as they say you are either. Like, so you embrace it. It's nice that it means so much to people, and definitely in the heat of battle with the noise that was coming out of the stand at the weekend with some of the turnovers in particular. I know some of the lads spoke about that to the media afterwards, just saying it can't but lift you. Like, you can't but get some sort of a kick out of hearing that. And when it's going tough, when the legs are heavy, it does make some lift here when you get that roar from the crowd and just push it on to try and keep giving them. You know, it kind of works both ways. We work hard, they react. They react, we work harder. You know what I mean? It keeps going like that, certainly on match day anyway. But it's about, as you said, getting that balance kind of off the pitch and the build-up, that you don't get too overwhelmed and too caught up in the little bit of a buzz that's going around right now.
Given the last, what is it, 6 or 7 months or so that you've had, it must be your favourite time to be playing football, given the Dunboyne's win in the championship and then now this league run.
Yeah, as it happened, I had a bit of a niggle over the pre-season. I didn't play in any of the O'Byrne Cups, just O'Byrne Cup games, just through a little bit of a niggle that I had. And obviously it was frustrating at the time. I just about got back in time to feature in the first round of the league. But maybe that's possibly done me no harm in the long run, just having a little bit of a break there, because as you said, we had a good year with Dunboyne. Now, unfortunately, that was on the back of a short year with Meath. But yeah, like things are going well. And I think a few of the Dunboyne lads that are playing at the moment are probably building on that. Like Seamus Lavin's absolutely flying at the moment. And Gavin McCoy has come in and made his debut and looked more than comfortable in the team. So I think from our perspective, that year with Dunboyne and finally getting some success with a team that had probably underachieved for a while has certainly helped the three of us pushing on in with Meath this year.
I know you probably don't want to necessarily revisit it too much, but you just touched off how last year finished. I suppose the disappointment surrounding that. I wonder, is that something that the group holds on to? Like, do you just park that, or when you look back at that now, what are your feelings on it at the minute?
I suppose, especially that Tyrone game, which was so disappointing not to get something out of it. Disappointing all as it was, I think it gave lads a sense of the level of performance we can get to. Unfortunately, we haven't, over the last number of years, got that consistency. But I think that left lads with a bit of a feeling of, right, that's what we're able to do on any given day. We didn't get a result. We accept that. But, you know, we competed with, we were ultimately the All-Ireland finalists. We more than competed with them and could have won the game. And I think that sort of lingering feeling was a bit of a driving force behind lads wanting to really push on this year. And it still can be used and still is used as a reminder of, you know, the horrible feeling you get when you come out the wrong side of results. And it definitely drives lads on in tight games like the weekend there, that you know, it's good, not, it's great to play well and be competitive, but at the end of the day, you lose by 1 point, you lose by 10 points, you have the same sort of feeling and change exactly. So I think we do still refer back to a few games like that, but at the right time. I mean, you can't be too caught up with it, but it's still in the back of your mind as you know, what levels we can be at and what levels you need to be at, more importantly, if you want to be winning these games.
Okay, because I never really appreciated the learnings you could take from a good performance, kind of regardless of the results. Like, I suppose it just makes sense in terms of the process. But that's something you can take motivation from, is it? That the idea that despite the results, you performed quite well on the day?
In a sense, like, I mean, ultimately, you're never going to be happy losing. Like, that'll be an awful reflection on you. But when you sit down in the, you know, with a bit more composure about you, a little bit away from it, you can learn a lot about the performance. And ultimately, if you keep bringing more consistent performances, you're going to start getting the rub of the green from time to time and getting a few more results. And I think that's probably been the most satisfying thing so far in the league for us. We have lost the game in the middle of it against Donegal, but in a lot of ways, the first 60 minutes of that was possibly one of our better performances of all the games, and yet it was the one we lost. So while it was extremely disappointing, we can still learn a huge amount of what works well and how to build on this and what to keep and what to drop. So yeah, I think once the emotion of the immediate overriding emotion of the results is taken out of it, you can certainly look at the performance aspect as a whole to learn and gain and benefit a lot from moving forward.
There's lots of talk, as always, about championship structures and league structures. And I think once again this year, the league has proven to be such an entertaining competition. But you've got a really busy spring in terms of that. You've got the league coming up, and then you're straight into a couple of championship games, probably in Meath, and then onto the All-Ireland series or Leinster Championship with Meath. What are your thoughts on that? Or do you even have time as a player to really think about it in terms of what would the ideal structure be that way? Because one of the things I was thinking about the league there this weekend after is, like, it's such a shame it finishes so soon that nearly if everyone had to play each other twice, it'd be such an entertaining thing, because even Keane O'Neill was so complimentary of Meath. You could tell that this was a brilliant game and you want to see more of it. But at the same time, player welfare, already Meath are already struggling with the club scene to get in all the games they need to. So it is definitely a tricky one to solve.
Yeah, like, I don't think there's ever going to be an ideal setup that kind of accommodates all aspects of it. I think the league has taken on a new life in the last number of years, and I know some of my friends that would follow it massively, they say as a supporter it's so enjoyable just getting these regular games, and you learn so much more about players and you're seeing them week on week. And I suppose the whole tiered element does bring its benefits in that you're getting far more regular competitive games from Division 1 then to Division 4, naturally, that teams are paired off against each other. But ultimately, I'd still be a little bit traditional in terms of the championship. I like the idea of a provincial structure and playing against your nearest most local rivals. I think that's a lot of what the GAA is sort of founded on. But there probably can be changed today, but as I say, I find it very hard to see what a perfect scenario is, especially if you mentioned you start bringing in the club fixtures and everything else that goes with it. So, like, sometimes it's easy to point fingers and give out, but it can be very hard to come up with a perfect scenario. I don't envy the ones that have to try and deal with fixtures, be it at club or county level or whatever the case may be.
Just on that, Shane, I was going to ask that actually about how ye consider the Leinster Championship now, because obviously, I mean, you have to treat them like any other team, but Dublin are the monster that continually dominate it right now. Like, from a from a player's perspective, do you get the same sense of enjoyment out of that kind of championship football as you would now out of these kind of good competitive games that you're currently playing in?
We're not going to be naive here and say Dublin are obviously an exceptionally good team, and this particular Dublin team will go down statistically and in the history books as one of the most dominant teams the game has probably ever seen. But the way I always look at it, and some people have a bit of a laugh, I mean, all these good teams eventually do have to get caught. Like, it doesn't matter, the All Blacks, Kilkenny, you know, eventually someone's going to have to catch them. And rather than looking for an easy way out, I just rather, from our perspective, keep doing your thing, keep working on it. And if it means you having to have a great day and them having an off day and you're the ones that catch them, so be it. But, I mean, I'd be quite true. I'd have huge motivation still in trying to be the ones that catch them. And I realise that's a massive challenge. And, you know, people looking on more neutral might think that that's a little bit deluded, but that's what we do it for, and that's what we want to do. So, I wouldn't be unmotivated by the Leinster Championship, given the role of honour recently or anything like that. I think it adds to the challenge, and it would add to a sense of accomplishment for whatever team it is that eventually breaks that unbelievable run that Dublin are on.
Obviously, we're talking about busy fixtures and a busy spring, but you've recently joined the army as well. How are you finding that in terms of balancing work with playing football?
It's not too bad now. As it worked out, my first year in on the meat panel was under Mick O'Dowd in 2016, and that was me during my cadetship. So that's when my induction training phase in the army down in the college. But actually, there's a lot of time to train from that, and ultimately it was too much. Mick was brilliant. He gave me loads of opportunities to try to make it work, but ultimately I just wasn't getting to near enough training. So it was sort of a sacrifice I had to make on a football front, just from a career perspective. So that first year was tough, but since then it's been quite good. Have to just try and balance my be organised in terms of my weekend shifts and whatever else, but it's been good. I'm in college at the moment through the Defence Forces, so I'm studying out in UCD, and at the moment it's working out fine. I'll have an overseas trip doing it in a couple of years, so that'll be a different challenge, but that's what I'm looking forward to as well. So I could have absolutely no complaints on that front.
In 2016, the struggle there was just balancing between work and time commitments, or just the hours that were taken for intercounty, is it?
Yeah, well, see, I was doing the cadetship, which is like my induction phase of training. So you're very much, you're down in the tournament unless your training staff say otherwise. That can be weekends and everything else. And in fairness to the training staff I had at the time, they accommodated me as best I could. And Mick O'Dowd was excellent in terms of trying to accommodate me and getting there. But if we had the tactical training on with the Defence Forces, that could be, you know, doing a few nights in the Wicklow Mountains or out in the ground at the Curragh, wherever, whatever the case may be, that came first and there was no getting out of that. And I completely accepted that because that was my job and that's my career and that was my priority. So ultimately, you know, there were some weeks I wasn't getting to any training with me, and some weeks I was getting to one, or I wasn't getting to half of what the lads were getting to. So Mick had me in, and I togged out for the majority of the National League games that year. But as championship came around, he made a call that I was kind of expecting to come already, and he just said, look, I think it's not really fair on you, probably not fair on the overall setup, and he was dead right. So he said, we'll leave it off and we'll see where next year takes us when you have a bit more free time in your hands. And I was finished my cadetship training at that stage, so it was a lot more manageable.
There's an awful lot of GA teams end up doing army training out in the Curragh to get that team bonding session going. What have you found in terms of being in the actual army, that has it benefited your GA in terms of the groove that you've gone through and the training that you've done?
Yeah, massively. I couldn't speak highly enough. Like, I think of all the things I've gotten so far out of my couple of years in the army, it's just a bit of life training, a bit of life skills. Dave, yeah. Ask my parents at home the difference in the lad they handed over to the corral one day.
Made in a bed in the morning. 15.
Yeah. Oh, jeez, they would have been laughing at the thoughts of some of the stuff I had to do. But on a very serious note, like some of the life skills, interpersonal skills, dealing with everybody, you know, you put across so many different personalities, and you go through a lot of tests, challenging parts of aspects of your training, and you know, it develops a bit of mental resilience, a bit of mental toughness that can only be helpful for any walk of life. And I suppose football being a good example, given, you know, the different challenges you could face, be it in training or matches or anything like this. So no, I'd have nothing but good words to say about all my times and all my experiences so far.
Finally, before we let you go, Shane, the year itself, you're still looking like you're kind of in a commanding position for in terms of promotion. Have you spoken about kind of tangible objectives for Meade's year, or is it just kind of as you spoke about earlier, the process and the results will hopefully come after that?
Yeah, like I'm probably just going to sound like your typical cliche footballer at this stage, but like the process is been something we have been emphasising a bit more. I mean, look, there's no getting away in the back of our minds. Everyone is looking at things like promotion first and foremost in the league. And then we probably haven't really looked at the championship too much, to be perfectly honest. But I mean, everyone ultimately is going to want to be the team that has that crack at Dublin on Leinster final day. But ultimately, at the moment, we just have two more games, two big games. And it's a really funny year, whereas normally 10 points the last couple of years have got you through the National League, got you into the final or promotion. But looking at the way the fixtures fall, 10 points won't guarantee it this year, pending on other results. So we're still very much focused on the process and the next stage of that being Clare in 2 weeks. But look, we do try and stress that possible. In the back of our minds, we definitely have looked at promotion, not just this year, at a number of years, and we put ourselves in a position so far. So hopefully we can see that out.
Just one thing as well before you go, Shane. I was reading your Twitter bio there, and you say you're a Mario Kart enthusiast. Now,
yeah.
A favourite Mario Kart character can say a lot about a man. Who do you usually go with?
Oh, I'd be a bit traditional. I just go with Mario on a bike, and if you ask James McKinney, my cousin, about it, I generally tend to win as well. He could never really get a measure of me when we were living together in college a few years ago. So I better get that mention in once it's Mario Kart.
Shane, thanks a minute for taking the call.
No worries, because Jackie cheers.
I would love it if Cork beat them. Yeah. Also, can we talk about the fact that when I was walking out, Stan, one of them turned to the other one. Ashford, it's great to be back in Division 1.
I've kept really quiet, but I'll tell you something. He went down in my estimation when he said that. We have not resorted to that.
Let Cork beat them and Cameron Tipperary go.
But I'll tell you, you can tell him now if you're watching it, we're still fighting for this title.
And I'll tell you now, they're still fighting for this title. And they've got to go Cork and get something.
And he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something.
I think they're at home against Cork.
We just say things like that.
They're at home against Cork there.
And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
I would love it if Cork beat them.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
That was brilliant. Mark, you're off to join the army, I guess.
I think so. I think that was the missing ingredient in my life. I'm going to run up. We've run up hills many times before, but I think a full-on army training is what we need.
And not only making you in terms of physically, but as Shane outlined there, in terms of as a person, as a man.
As a human being. The importance of it. I think we should bring back conscription.
Jesus.
Not for the good of the country, but for the good of the GAA.
Oh, it comes first and foremost. They're not up yet, though.
No.
They got Dennis now in a couple of weeks, and we owed them a bit of a revenge, because last year when Clare were going along brilliant in Division 2 and everything, they were either winning games or losing by a point, and Meade bit them by about 15 goals all of a sudden in the middle of the league, so that worries me after. But I'm super positive today, so I'm going to go with Clare owed him a receipt, you know.
I love that that started off with a sort of, oh, he's having one yet. Oh, Jesus. We're going to get a scutcheon.
Do you know what? I have to say, as like, there's obviously I'm born and raised in Dublin, having never really been a Dublin fan. But the one part of being a Dub that stayed with me, rather than any kind of association with the Dublin team, has been a general kind of
hatred of Mead.
Yeah, but a hatred in a non-serious way.
I completely get you.
Because the way you hate Roscommon.
No, the way I hate Meath. Yeah. The Roscommon thing sort of come in the last couple of years. But like historically, Cavan's biggest rivals are Meath.
Yeah.
We like to think it's Monaghan, and maybe for some people in some parts of Cavan, it's Monaghan, but it's really Meath.
Yeah.
Like, we hate Meath. I remember Conor Rourke said there was in the early 90s when he was playing, there was a opening of the pitch in Carlow Ross, which is just on the Meath Cavan border. And he said something like 20,000 people show up to it. We know he's exaggerating, but it was massive. It was just an opening of a pitch, a Cavan Meath challenge game. And it was there was hair and everything else flying.
But yeah, like that's like, but at the same time, there's never a part of me that like necessarily wants me to win a match on the day, but I don't want them to be kind of irrelevant and gone either. And I was quite happy on Sunday night to see those scenes. And we've got about 50 Mead lads in the office here, which kind of adds to the sort of general.
Exactly. We can hate Mead, but we can respect Mead.
Yeah. Like, but we roll our eyes at the lads, but at the same time, we're glad like they're going to matches and are delighted with life.
And it's a sort of secret as well, appreciation of that team that you would have hated in the 90s. So like, I can remember. Yeah. Like, one of the reasons we hate Meath, I think I've listened to the podcast before, is that when Cavan went up to Croke Park in 97, the people of Kells lined the streets to welcome us back, all the fans, after we lost to Kerry, by throwing stones at the car. And like, my grandmother, who's 99 this year, absolutely despises Meath. And all I ever hear is, why do you hate Meath? Throwing the stones at the car and scumbag Kyle. That's what we call him, Kyle. But you have the Tommy Dowd, all these people, but there's an appreciation that they were hard men. Actually, it's in this line, it's in this same article of Seamus O'Rourke, where is it? One of the lads going to the game, Tommy Battles, who was a Leitrim fan, had no hope for Leitrim in 94 when he said that Leitrim chances, they'd never have a chance. He said, weeds of men you get in Leitrim, he says. Never win anything with them. You need the bigger men you find in Meath. So there was that kind of appreciation for that type of player.
Just quickly as well, on that, before we move on from this, one point I think that he made really well there is one of the reasons that he is a big fan of the championship as it is, and why maybe instead of just abolishing a whole hall, you could maybe flip the year, is those local rivalries, which, like it or not, are brilliant. Like, they kind of, and they really add, whether it's Mark, Ranson and Raven in here, they really do add something in terms of colour to the year, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So we should introduce Cavan to the Leinster Championship.
I was going to say, yeah.
Speaking of rivalries, myself and Mark are going to do battle again, because I guess the Spreads competition is up and I'm not adjudicating.
No, I'm going to do it this week, and it's all hurling.
Morris just beat me for promotion in the Table Tennis League as well. Weekly Table Tennis League.
But do the double here, yeah.
Right, okay. Well, he's not promoted yet. There's still a few games to play. I've had a look at the spreads. All hurling. I've decided to keep it with Division 1, but 1A and 1B, right? So you've a good chance in this one. We'll start with 1A. A postponed fixture. Now, I can't remember whether it's the same spread or not, but it might give you a clue. we're only doing one of the two postponed fixtures. Wexford versus Kilkenny. Division 1A, Wexford at home. Mark, I'm going to start with you. What do you think?
Kilkenny -3.
Okay, Morris. And just before you do, Morris, I have to say that there is a... we will do the 2-point bonus for a dead-on score.
I'd say Kilkenny -2.
And it's Kilkenny -1.
Is it? Wow.
Yeah.
That's the third time we've done that one. We still keep getting it wrong.
It's in Wexford Park, you know. Kilkenny have them in that good away from home this year. You know, I think that them being favourites at all is not even a guarantee, really. But they're -1. So I'm going to start now. A tough one. I won't give it away, actually. But the only hurling quarterfinal that's decided and that will be played this weekend is Laois hosting All-Ireland champions Limerick. Laois in a quarterfinal of the league, I think, is pretty amazing, and they'll be delighted with that. But obviously they will be underdogs. But Morris, by how much? I hope that doesn't give anything away, Mark. You're all right with that, are you?
I think, yeah.
I think when Limerick played Carlow, I'm going to say it was the same, -12.
Okay, Mark.
I was thinking Limerick -11, but I feel like 12... No, I'm going to stick with Limerick -11. That was my gut.
Well,
it's bigger than
Tony. One of you are right.
Oh.
One of us are. It's Mark, isn't it?
It's Mark. Limerick minus 11. And yeah, he at least pretended that was his original idea as well. So 2 points for
it
Mark.
It was. This is again, you did this before we even started recording. Mark, always accusing
Mark,
me of cheating.
Mark leading by 2 points to one as we enter the most important game of the entire weekend in the Hurling League, which is the 1B relegation playoff between Offaly and Carlow. It's in Tullamore. Mark, what you got?
I would have had Carlo as the favourites for this before last week, but now, and like they got well beaten, but I don't think this
was an 11 point win.
I'm going to say Offaly minus 4.
Morris.
I'm going to say Offaly minus 3.
It's Offaly minus 2.
I played that safe. No,
yeah, you played it safe. I could see it in you that you knew it was more. There was a bigger gap, but Offaly minus 2 home to Carlow, 1B playoff, relegation playoff. That leaves us at 2-2 with 2 to play. So I better go reaching into my box of tricks for a playoff here and hope that doesn't happen. Another rescheduled fixture here in 1B. In the finally there'll be Walsh Park. A visit to Waterford for Galway. Waterford at home to Galway. Morris.
I'm going to say Galway are favourite and minus 1 is a spread.
Mark.
Oh, I think like Morris has it nailed on, and this is like I'm going to have to go something different just to be different. But I suppose Galway minus 2.
He was right, and you knew he was right, and that's a 2 point one, and that's a tough one. However, you will get the chance. You will get the chance to get it back here. You need to get this bang on. I lied earlier when I said that I didn't have the other 1A fixture because I'd forgotten that I had included it, and it is Cork at home to Tipperary in Porky Rin. I think isn't it? Porky Rin's not open yet. And what you got? You have to get it bang on. It's 4-2 tomorrow.
Cork minus, was it either 2 or 1? Cork minus 2.
Cork minus 2.
It's definitely 1.
This is going to be an interesting game for a lot of reasons, particularly because
look at the shite now he's going to talk about before he settles on Cork minus 1.
Cork minus 1.
it's Cork minus 1. I found it very hard to keep a straight face there. I had a very good poker face all the way through this game, I have to say, and I let myself down there in the last one. Morris didn't see it and was going to shy talk for 5 minutes before ultimately settling on what you said. Cork minus 1.
On that though, this game I think might be called off because there's snow predicted for this weekend in Cork. And if it's called off, it'll cause absolute chaos because there's no space for it right now, which means it's going to be pushed back into the April for clubs. So the consequences of that will be...
Which happened last year as well. So 2 years in a row.
We don't know if anyone's going to observe April for clubs anyway, but the fact that they're going to play games in it when it was just for a second year in a row where it would be shambles.
Yeah.
And they're giving snow already for the weekend.
Apparently, according to reliable Twitter.
Oh. Can we have a look, and you guys will know your own counties, and we should have a look in general, but there's no Clare Hurling Championship games on in April. I know that for a fact. We'll have a look around, and it's something that we should talk a little bit about on the show, I think, because the meaning of the club month, which is all very well-intentioned, I'm sure, even though it was a kind of an add-on to ultimately adding more games to both championships, doesn't seem to have really had an effect on club players in general, and it really is a nuisance having the league. We're wrapping up the Hurling League, basically. You know, if for some reason Clare don't make a quarter final now, they won't have played. They won't play another match for, I think, 10 weeks or something like that, which is ridiculous at this time of year when they've so much hurling played already up until March. I think it's the same in the football. I think there's too many games played in awful weather. And I'd be just interested to know if April is helping. I'd be willing to consider, look, these things need to happen, but I don't think April's helping.
Without casting aspersions on anybody, do you think, in the example of Clare aren't playing championship games at the will of intercounty managers?
I don't know.
Yeah, because there is that thing, we have to say what is the value of the club month, because Cavan don't play any football championship games, but like I wouldn't hold that, like that's, like the, it doesn't, I'm always one who doesn't really agree with that playing football championship.
It's too early for the championship in club as well. Yeah.
We're talking about that, Shane, in Meath, in terms of that Meath have, like, it's such a prolonged thing where, like, your season could, if you lose a couple of games in the club championship in April, your season's over already.
I suppose my point is, and we don't really have time for this now, we'll get into another time. I suppose my point is that I don't necessarily think the championship game should be played in April either, but I'm saying is, what good is April then?
Exactly.
Because you're talking about a lot of players, a lot of elite players basically putting their feet up for a month and a half at the most crucial time of the year to get ready for the championship. They're not putting their feet up, but they're not playing any football or hurling. And except for like challenge matches,
league
and
there's games.
But are they even playing league games for their club? And should they even be playing league games for their club?
I think
that's another.
Yeah, I think. Like for any county, the club is what you make of it. So, say for example, for Kerry have a huge training panel right now. But anyone who's not involved with the playing squad and knows they're not going to be involved with their playing squad is back playing with their clubs right now. So they're playing league games in Kerry, instead of doing this stupid sprints after a game when you're miserable because you haven't come on anyway and you're put out onto a pitch and that's the alternative. But you're just going to run them into the ground.
That's a very good point, and that's 100% what they should be doing. We should be doing it like rugby. So if the Irish squad is cut on a Tuesday, those lads go back to their club, they play Pro 14 that week, and then they rejoin the Irish squad on the Monday, right? And that's the way it should be done. And it's absolutely how we should treat league games. But you can't, I don't think, expect players to play both when they're starting both. And I think the idea that the club championship holds, or the club everything, the club life holds up for the county teams at all times, I think is unfair on both sides. It's unfair on the county team too. It's unfair on the players and the management and all, and the fans.
Speaking of that, do you think it's fair on the club player to promise them you'll be finished a podcast by a certain time and then holding them past that?
We're finished.
Before we let you go, on the theme of rugby,
we're 7 minutes on time. How dare you?
On the theme of rugby, you can listen to our rugby podcast, World in Union, which is also available on the BozEddy podcast and on site. If you've got any feedback or comments, you can get on to us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at BozEddy, or you can email thegaffer@BozEddy. But once again, for now, mind yourself.
I'm not learning that. Can you convince me?